Before Colton comes up and delivers the message to us today, I want to come up and make a few announcements and tell you that we've got some folks here for the very first time. But before I introduce those little ones to us all, I want to announce to you a family who has been with us now for quite some time. But just the other day, we got to talking, and they said, hey, I don't think we've made that official yet. And so they're ready to make official today that they are placing their membership at the Azalea City Church of Christ, and we are very excited about it. They are great workers, a great family. I'm over here to my right is Wes, Anna, John, and Lily McGilberry. And guess what? You got to stand up, Wes. Come on. Welcome them to Azalea City Church of Christ. I'm going to really embarrass Anna now, but she's a teacher at Mobile Christian. Does a great job, been teacher of the year over there. Today is also her birthday, so make sure to make her feel special. Then also, for the very first time, we have a young lady and a young man here. The young lady, ladies first, Hudson, all right? So we're going to let Libby Roy come up. Daddy, bring her on up.
Look at her stretched out. Look at her. Beautiful angel right there, isn't it? Great job. I'm doing so good without making you cry. Congratulations to Josh and Marlena. So proud of them and just so thankful for her and everything. Now, Tyler, bring Hudson up. This is my first time, obviously my first time getting the whole flip too, but getting to hold my great nephew here, so excited about that. By the way, he is a monster. He is now about a 11 pounder. Yeah, don't be strong. This is Hudson Smith. Hudson Smith. So we're excited about that. Tyler, Rebecca, congratulations.
First of all, I don't know who makes that homemade Lord's Supper that you all have here, but that person deserves a raise. I'm demanding they get a raise. I'm going to say that bread is about as good as a Hardee's biscuit, so I've not experienced that anywhere in all my travels, so hats off to whoever is in charge of that. It is such a privilege, it's a joy to be here with you at Azalea City. I have loved getting to know the people at this church over the past couple of years. I've had a lot of fun getting to know Justin and Terry in particular. Went home last time, was telling my wife about all the fun I had. She said, tell me about them, what's Justin and Terry like? I said, well, one of them is great-looking guys, super nice, very pleasant to be around, very friendly. And the other one works out a lot. No, I'm telling you what, I'm serious when I say I travel around a whole lot, and I don't know that I have encountered a better duo yet, and I know you all are so blessed to have the ministers here that you have, and I'm so blessed to be here with you. If I could see a show of hands real quick, how many of you all have heard of Healing Hands before? Okay, wow, that's great. That's what I was hoping for. If there's any of you here who haven't heard of Healing Hands, we are a faith-based nonprofit out of Nashville, Tennessee, supported by the Churches of Christ. Our mission is to aid, equip, and empower low-income communities all over the world. And we do that through a variety of ministries. We have a water ministry, a food ministry. We have a Women of Hope ministry. We have something called the Magi Project. And we do disaster relief. Now, time's limited today, so I'm only going to talk about a few of those. And I'm going to start, like I always do, talking about clean water. I'd like you to take a minute, if you can, and I want you to imagine all of the ways that you've used clean water today. I suspect when you woke up, one of the first things that you did was you went and used a restroom and flushed the toilet. And then you turned on a sink to wash your hands. And then you took a shower. And you brushed your teeth. And you made some coffee. Probably drank some water. Later on, you're probably going to give some water to your kids to drink, to your cats to drink, to your dogs to drink. You're going to wash some dishes. You're going to wash your car. You're going to water your garden. Can you even fathom how challenging your life would be if you no longer had access to fresh, clean water? That's the story right now for nearly 1 billion people on this planet. And so what they do every single day when they get up is they grab a bucket, they grab a jerry can, they grab whatever it is they have that'll hold water, and they start walking. And some of them walk 1 mile, some 2 miles, some 5 miles. Give you an anecdote about this. A few years back, I was in Haiti. We were traveling to this remote village, and as we were driving along, we crossed this little stream. There were these two young men, probably 8, 9 years old. And they had 2 jerry cans each. They had just filled up with water from that stream, and they're about to walk home to their village, and we asked them if they wanted a ride, and they did. So they hopped in the back of our truck. And we drove those 2 young men 5 miles one direction. And the next day when we were gone, those 2 young kids were going to get up again. They were going to grab those same jerry cans. They were going to make that same 5 mile walk back to that same stream. And they were going to carry that same weight back home again. And whatever they carried was the only water that their family was going to have that day. Now, unfortunately, if you know much about the water crisis, you already know that the opportunity cost, the distance traveled, that's not the worst part of the crisis. The worst part of the crisis is the quality of the water that they get. That's an average water source in rural Kenya. That's an average water source in rural Kenya. A few years back, we were visiting this community here. We were completing a water project. I met this young lady. She was my age, which means she's 32 now. She had 5 kids at the time. She told me she makes the walk from her house to this water stream 4 times every single day to get water for her family. In this community, there were 2,500 people and there were 10,000 animals, and every single one of those living creatures got their water from this right here. There's a little underwater stream there, and so you'd scoop it up and then it'd bubble back to the top. And while we were finishing our well, I stood there all day long and I watched them stand in line 30 minutes, hour at a time, getting water to take back home. Next day we left this village, went and visited some of our brothers and sisters at the Ayaro Church of Christ. Met the preacher there, had lunch with them. We were completing a water project there as well. And he asked if we wanted to go and see where they were currently getting their water. And we did. So we walked about 1 mile or so from the church building to what I'd call a mud hole, about the size of this room here. And while we were there talking, there were these 2 young ladies who walked up with their jerry cans. They started getting water. And behind them, there was another gentleman who had also showed up. And he had about 12 or so cows with him. And those cows were standing knee-deep in that water. And if you know much about cows, you know that while they were drinking, they're defecating into the same water that those 2 ladies were about to take home, to cook with, to clean with, to drink, to give their children to drink. Because it's the only water that they have. Every single day on this planet, we lose 6,000 people to dirty water. And of that 6,000, about 90% of them are children ages 5 and younger. Because their bodies are the most vulnerable to the diseases that they get. Now, the thing about the water crisis that is a cause for hope and simultaneously a cause for never-ending frustration is that it's not some disease that we're trying to find a cure for. It isn't as though the world doesn't know how to solve the water crisis. It's incredibly simple. You take a big truck, you drive it to their village, you poke around in the ground, you try and find water, and when you do, you drill down, and then you build a well, and then people have water. We could solve it tomorrow if we wanted to. The problem is convincing those in the world who have resources to care enough to do something about the issue. And when that happens, we get different stories and different images. Get images like this. It's one of my favorite pictures in the entire world. It's so hard to overstate what's happening here. Here's a young lady who I guarantee you, I don't know who she is, but I guarantee you for every single day of her life that she can remember, she has walked with a sister, with her mom, with a group of friends to go and get water. And then one day, out of nowhere, for reasons she can't possibly fathom, these folks show up and they say they're Christians and they tell her that she's not going to have to walk anymore. And they put a well right at the edge of her village. And instead of walking for hours, she walks 5 minutes and she gets crystal clear water. And the only reason she's ever going to know as to why that happened is because Jesus loves her, and we love her, and she deserves it. I want to share with you a couple of other stories. Let me see a show of hands real quick. How many of you all participated in the Walk for Water last year here at Azalea City? I know there was an awful bunch of you, I'm telling you. Last year, the walk we had here, if you weren't able to participate, absolutely incredible. It was so hot. My word, it was so hot, but it was so enjoyable. Got to see some big fellas try and carry the heavy water the whole way. Not going to name any names, but preachers that work out a lot. And we raised the money that day, and all the money that we raised went to drilling wells and fixing wells. And because of those efforts, because of what you did, because you cared, there's three more wells in the world that didn't exist and wouldn't exist if not for you. I want to tell you a little bit about them real quick. This well right here is in Ghana. It's in a village, a community called the Tambona community. I have a little bit of history. This not much. A few years ago, six or seven years ago, I was in Ghana and had a really good friend that I met there, kind of guy that's just infectious. As soon as you meet him, he becomes your best friend. His name was Isaac, happiest human I've ever met in my life, born and raised in Ghana, just a great guy. To tell you how great of a guy he is, he was an incredible soccer player, was on the Ghanaian national team, had a chance to be an Olympian, became a Christian, decided to quit soccer to dedicate his life to spreading the word about Jesus, and just an incredibly, incredibly great person. We lost him during COVID, but he was remarkable. I wish every one of you got to meet him. He told me when I was in Ghana, he said, Colton, there's a church dispute up the road here, and I want you to go with me. And we're going to take the dirt bike out there. And I said, no, we're not. I am not going with you. We are not doing this. He said, trust me, it's right down the road. It's this little dirt road. It'll be fine. I said, okay, fine. I went with him. It was 100 miles one way on a dirt bike. We got about halfway there. He said, it's incredible how well this is going. I said, why did you say that? What does that mean? He goes, well, I just haven't ridden one of these in about 15 years. So I'm glad it's going well. On that 100-mile journey, we passed some of the most remote places I've ever seen on this planet. We passed several villages of folks who had never seen a white person in their life. They're just out in the middle of nowhere. And one of those communities we passed was the Tambona community in Ghana. This community lies close to the border of Togo. While this well was being drilled, a conflict broke out between the Tambona community and another community across the border in Togo, something that happens from time to time. While this delayed the drilling of the well, it did open the door for James Legend, who's our field trainer in Ghana. to share a message of peace and reconciliation between the two communities. And I want you to hear what Mr. Amos Azuri had to say at the dedication of this well. He said, "We must emulate the lifestyle of these people. I want to thank Healing Hands International, and I want to thank the Churches of Christ for teaching us a great lesson today as they liberate us from unclean water. The Lord of Heaven will continue to guide and bless you greatly for bringing peace to us. Thank you." In Bible class today, I heard Terry talking about what it's like to go out and to be revolutionary and to be different and to show the world what it's like to be a Christian. And I was thinking as he was talking how interesting it is, how this work, unlike anything I've ever seen, when you go and you give physical water to people and physical life to people, how naturally that evolves into spiritual life, into changing hearts, into changing people's minds. I want you to meet a member of the Dindiri community in Kenya. At this village, there was a lady named Mwaka Kai. Here's what she had to say. "Water has been our greatest challenge ever since I moved into Dindiri when I was married 60 years ago. But what I've seen the Lord do today is to know that my grandchildren will no longer have to walk for long distances in search of life." Here's a young lady about 80 years old or so, probably, honestly, I'm not being hyperbolic, probably never seen clean water in her life. A bottle like this, never seen that. Never seen water that wasn't brown. In all of her 80 years, and the first thing she had to say when she saw this, when this water bubbled up and it starts coming out of the pump and the villagers are celebrating, is she says, I know that my grandchildren are going to have a better life than I had because of this. I tell you a story about this lady. Share with you the story about the lady my age with the five kids. Those are two stories, three stories. What you did at the Walk for Water last year is you've created literally probably 1,000 of those stories. We drilled 3 wells. I guarantee that, I mean, every well is about 500 people, roughly, depending on where it is. Probably 1,500 people whose entire life is different now because of what you did. People you're never going to meet, probably. I can't tell you how thankful I am for everything you did. I can't tell you how thankful Healing Hands is, the churches that have been impacted. I mean, that well right there is at the Dindiri Church of Christ in Kenya. And I promise you, they're going to use that well to spread the message and tell people about what God has done for them. And I guarantee you that the church is going to grow in those areas, that people's lives are going to be different because of what you did. So we're going to do this again. We're going to do it again in October, and if you got the chance to participate last year, I hope and pray you'll do it again. And if you didn't get the chance, I hope and I pray that you will please be a part of this in some way. You don't have to walk 4 miles if you're not a big walker. You don't have to walk at all. You can give money to support these efforts, to help us drill more wells, to help us repair more wells. You can tell your friends and your family about what we're doing. You can go out into your community and you can tell them what the church at Azalea City is doing. You can pray about this. You can pray for these people. You can be mindful of these people. Every bit of that is incredibly helpful for these efforts and what the church is doing in Africa and around the world. And I hope and pray that you'll be a part of it in some way. I want to talk to you about agriculture as well. I love talking about agriculture. It's a natural tie-in. We love to do ag projects in areas where we have wells because, you probably know this, it's a lot easier to grow vegetables when you have water nearby. Bill Gates has a saying that's true. He says, if you care about poor people, then you care about agriculture. And that's right, for at least 2 reasons. One, the very obvious issue of malnutrition. It's very rare for someone to starve to death today outside of conflict zones. It's just not something that happens that often, thank the Lord. However, unfortunately, it is all too common to see people who suffer from malnutrition. And if you don't know much about it, I'm telling you, people suffer their entire lives because they were unable to get enough calories when they were 0 to 2 years old. And again, it's not something we're trying to cure. We know how to do it. That's one. Number two, when you look at a cross-section of the world's poorest people, those who live on about $2 a day, U.S. dollars a day or less, what you see is about 53% of them are smallholder farmers. That means they make their living growing and selling food on the land where they sit. And so what we know is that if we can help to increase the yields of smallholder farms, we can make a significant dent in global poverty. I'm not talking about making people rich. I'm not talking about people being able to buy nice automobiles and trucks. I'm talking about getting people beyond a subsistent level to get them on the first rung on the economic ladder so that they can actually start to think about what the future might look like. They can actually start to think about what they can do to better their situation rather than merely being in survival mode because they're trying to feed their family all of the time. And again, we know how to do it. It's a very simple process. I'm going to focus on just a few things. I mean, we did it here in the U.S. We did it in Germany. We did it in Britain. We did it in France. We did it in every so-called developed nation. You focus on better water. You focus on better access to water. Focus on better soil, focus on better seed, and you focus on better technique. And that's exactly what our ag program is trying to do all across Africa. We have these things called ag workshops. We get invited by a church. Everywhere we go by invitation. And 90% of those are either a church or a college, a preacher college, something of that sort. We go, we host a workshop for 2 or 3 days, and we teach people how to build a raised bed garden. We give them a year's worth of inputs. We show them how to use a micro-irrigation system. We teach them how to best grow food where they are. Every one of our trainers are local people who know the area, who know the people, who understand the culture, who know what's best to plant based on where they are. And also, every one of our ag trainers are trained preachers. We decided at one point that we wanted the ag program to be a huge part of our evangelistic efforts, and we had to make preachers farmers or farmers preachers, and decided it might be easier to make preachers farmers. And so we went to the preacher colleges and started teaching agriculture and found some ag trainers, and now they go back to the church they were going to go to or to go start a church like they were going to do, and in addition to that, they work with us teaching people how to raise food. This gentleman right here is named Jeremiah. You'll notice that Jeremiah was born without hands. When Jeremiah was born, the village told his mother that she should take him outside the village, lay him on the ground, and leave him because he was born with a demon, and that's why he didn't have hands. Now, fortunately, his mother didn't do that, but as you might suspect, Jeremiah had a pretty tough upbringing, wasn't viewed very well amongst his peers. And in Jeremiah's own words, that sort of led him to become a person who was of very little value. He was hateful. He was abusive to his wife. He was abusive to his children. He was an alcoholic. In 2016, Jeremiah came to an agriculture workshop that we put on in the Kisii village, Kisii community in rural Kenya. And everyone was blown away by just how well Jeremiah could farm, given the fact that he had no hands. And you've been in those types of settings. You can probably picture it in your mind. Someone starts laughing. They say, come over here and watch this guy. That brings him an awful lot of joy. No one's ever respected him before. No one's ever wanted to see what he could do before. He starts laughing. They start having a great time. Jeremiah came every day that week to every lesson that was taught. And on the last day there, he and 18 other members of the Kisii community were baptized into Christ. And they founded the Kisii Church of Christ. A few years after this, I was there. We were doing another ag workshop. I feel this presence come up beside me, and I look over, and it's Jeremiah. It's the first time I ever met him. And Jeremiah says, Colton, I say, Jeremiah. He says, I hear you've been talking about me over in the States. I said, I have. Yeah, I hope that's okay. He said, that's great. He said, I hear in America I'm famous. I said, well, you know, it's a relative term, sure. He said, next time you go back and you tell my story, I want you to tell them this. I want you to tell them that I took every single ounce of knowledge that I learned in this workshop and I put it to use. And the next year, I raised more food on my land than I have ever raised in my life. And I sold the extras and I saved every penny and I went to the market and I bought a cow. And the next year, I saved every single penny that I earned off that cow. And I went back to the market and I bought a second cow. And the next time you tell my story, I want you to tell them that Jeremiah is the man with two cows. I think that story exemplifies better than any story I've ever heard what Healing Hands is all about, what the church's efforts in Africa is all about. When you go to a place and you just help people, it gives them a sense of value. It gives them spiritual hope. That church I told you about, when we were there, it had grown from 19 members to 150 members. They had built this church building. They had built these pews. And while we were there, they were talking about expanding the walls because they couldn't fit everyone inside anymore. Because again, when you go somewhere and you just help people, you don't ask them for anything in return, you don't give them any rules to follow, you just go and you just help them and you do it because Jesus loves them and you love them. When you do that, they want to know why it is you do what you do. They want to know what it is about you that makes you so different that people in Mobile, Alabama, who have never met any of these people, why they would give up a Saturday, why they would give up their hard-earned funds, why they would care so much about someone they've never met before. They want to know why that is. And it's infectious. And they want to be a part of it. I want to change gears for a little bit here. I'm supposed to tell you about our monthly giving community, but I'm running out of time. If someone calls you and says, hey, did Colton talk about the monthly giving community, this new thing we're doing? Say, yes, he did. He mentioned it, and it encouraged me to look it up and learn more about it and consider being a part of that. I want to read something to you. This is a verse you're all very familiar with. It's Matthew 25, beginning in verse 31. But when the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, He'll sit upon His glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered in His presence, and He'll separate the people as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And He'll place the sheep at His right hand and the goats at His left. And the King will say to those on His right, come you who are blessed by my Father and inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing and I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. And then these righteous ones will reply, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or a stranger and show you hospitality, or naked and give you clothing? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the King will say, I tell you the truth. When you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me. I started attending church when I was 16 years old, the Lone Cedar Church of Christ up in Greenhill, Alabama. Been at church pretty much every Sunday and Wednesday since. I've heard a lot of lessons about getting to heaven, about becoming a member of the church. In all of those lessons, I've heard a lot of verses. You've heard them. You know what they are. You know the steps. You know exactly what I mean. I think in all of the time that I've been going to church and hearing those lessons, I don't think I've ever once heard Matthew 25 mentioned in that context. I'm not saying it's never been taught. just saying I don't think I've ever heard it. Now, I'm not one to be dramatic, all right? I'm not trying to make a mountain out of a molehill here. Nor am I one to teach fire and brimstone, if you will. It's not really my vibe. But I will tell you this honestly. Sometimes I get concerned about us in the American church, myself, first of all. I get concerned that one of these days we're going to stand before our Maker and we're going to say, I did everything I was supposed to do. I read, I heard, I listened, did the steps, I was there every time the doors were open, didn't cuss, didn't do this, I didn't do that. And we're going to say all of those things, and our Creator is going to look at us, He's going to say, it's good that you did those things, but let me ask you this, how did you treat people? What did you do? Not what you didn't do, what did you do? Because you were born in the richest country in the history of human civilization. You had more wealth than anyone ever. You had more power than anyone ever. You had more technology than anyone ever. More comfortability than anyone ever. And you knew all over the world, everywhere you looked, there were people hurting. There were people struggling to feed their kids. There were people without clean water. There were people whose kids were dying because they couldn't afford a 25-cent vaccine. You knew that the whole time you were living your life. What did you do? I just ask you to think about that this morning and think about it as you go forward today. If there's anyone out there that needs any help whatsoever, I'm telling you, I know the people here. I know for a fact the leaders of this church want to talk with you. If you're someone who's not a member of this church and you're thinking about it, I would urge you to consider it strongly. There's a lot of work going on. We could really use your help. If there's anything you need at all, please come forward right now while we stand and while we sing.